content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is the July 2023 edition of Education Today. The first article comes from Education Week, and it's titled, Should Schools Reward Attendance? What the Experts Say, by Lydia McFarlane, posted July 11th, 2023. Perfect attendance awards encourage students to come to school, even when they are not feeling well, either mentally or physically. However, the COVID-19 pandemic seemed to have shifted attitudes, with schools advocating for mental health days and encouraging students to stay home while they were sick to stop the spread of illnesses. Attendance awards are not effective in motivating students to go to school. Some even call the practice outdated, and are not equitable to students of all backgrounds. Experts interviewed by Education Week say educators need to rethink how they view attendance and how they can combat absenteeism without involving awards. While we think recognition of good and improved attendance can be helpful, we advise against awarding perfect attendance for a semester or the school year, since the children who struggle the most will soon be left out, said Hetty Chang, the executive director of Attendance Works, a national nonprofit that conducts research and advocacy to reduce chronic absenteeism. In interviews with Education Week, experts shared research and best practices they say educators need to know about using awards and other more effective and equitable ways to encourage attendance. This section is called Attendance Awards Are Not Effective. Many researchers have attempted to answer the question if attendance awards are effective in the classroom and have overwhelmingly found that they are not. Experts and leaders have previously pointed out the flaws in attendance awards and outlined how schools are sending poor messaging about attendance. Todd Rogers is a professor of public policy at Harvard University who has conducted research on school attendance. As part of a research paper published in 2018, which Rogers collaborated on, a survey of 15,000 students spanning from 6th to 12th grades across 14 West Coast school districts discovered a demotivating effect of attendance awards. Students randomly assigned to receive these attendance awards had worse attendance in the weeks after they were received compared to students who were not assigned to receive them, Rogers said of the study. It appears these awards convey to students that they attend school more than their classmates, so they are licensed to attend a little less. For this study, Rogers and his collaborators only observed the effects of traditional attendance awards, such as certificates or acknowledgement of attendance. The other collaborators on the research paper were Carly Robinson, senior researcher at Stanford University's Graduate School of Education, and the director of research for Ed Solutions at the Stanford Accelerator for Learning, Jana Gallis, associate professor of strategy and behavioral decision making at the University of California, Los Angeles, and Monica G. Lee, senior research associate at Stanford University. This next section is called How Bad is Chronic Absenteeism? Chronic absenteeism is generally defined as students who miss 10% or more of the school year for any reason, excused or unexcused. Before the pandemic, about 1 in 6 students in the country, more than 7 million, were chronically absent, according to data collected by the U.S. Department of Education. The rates of absence are much higher for students of color than for their white peers. And absenteeism is 15% less likely among English-speaking students than among non-English-speaking students. Since the pandemic, the problem has become more prevalent, as the number of students who are chronically absent has significantly increased. As of the 2020-2021 school year, 10.1 million students were chronically absent, according to recent data from the U.S. Department of Education. While the latest data from the Department of Education is from the 2020-2021 academic year, Attendance Works has predicted that chronic absences will continue to rise post-pandemic based on state trends. David Conrad, a professor of education at Governors State University, agreed with this prediction based on observations he has made from teachers following the pandemic. Educators tell me that remote learning conditions were demotivating to students and established unproductive learning habits, Conrad said. Educators at all levels are still helping students learn to play school, meet deadlines, show up on time and ready to learn, be focused and attentive, and follow other school norms. This next section is called, What are some factors that affect attendance? There are many extenuating circumstances in students' lives that can lead to chronic absenteeism, making them ineligible for attendance awards, such as those for perfect attendance. Experts say homelessness or housing instability can be a large factor in chronic absenteeism. Students who are chronically ill have caretaking responsibilities for younger siblings or older family members in multi-generational homes, or those who are working to support their households financially also may be chronically absent, according to the National Center for Homeless Education. Additionally, climate change coupled with the housing crisis continues to displace even more people. Extreme weather events have the potential to displace entire communities, making attendance at school difficult for children affected by these events. However, many low-income families of color have a difficult time rebuilding after a devastating weather event, according to the Climate Reality Project, a nonprofit focused on advocacy related to climate change. The next section is titled, What is the problem with encouraging perfect attendance? Due to extenuating circumstances in some students' lives, it's certain that kids who are struggling with family issues, poor health, and other issues are excluded from attendance awards, according to experts. Chronic absenteeism can have serious negative effects on students, including missing important educational milestones, such as developing critical literacy skills, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Absenteeism can also be a better indicator of the likelihood of a student dropping out of high school than test scores. Students who are chronically absent may feel overwhelmed at the thought of returning to school due to an influx of information they may have missed out on. Researchers and experts urge teachers to be understanding and ready to meet chronically absent students with support and resources upon their return to the classroom. When chronically absent students return to school, they need tutoring and academic support, Conrad said. But many schools punish unexcused absences by lowering grades and refusing to support makeup work. Sending truant students back to class without support may exacerbate their absenteeism when the content is too overwhelming. The next section is titled, What are alternate ways to encourage attendance? Rogers and his collaborators found that attendance nudge letters are one of the most effective motivators to get students back to school. These are personalized letters to households addressing a student's repeated absences. The experiments found that repeated rounds of customized mailings with asset-based language showing parents precisely how many days of school their students have missed is potent and scalable, Rogers said. Conrad suggested a two-pronged approach to addressing chronic absenteeism. First, he suggested tailoring the core curriculum in schools to be engaging to students and relevant to their lives. If students feel seen in the classroom and are interested in what they are learning, they will be more likely to come to school. Next, Conrad suggested that adults in the school make connections with their students. Every student needs a connection with at least one trusting adult in the school, he said. This could be their teacher, coach, advisor, a formal mentor, or any other staff member. Students are more likely to attend school when they feel connected. Chang and Attendance Works encourage an individualized approach to addressing chronic absenteeism. This approach would include gathering data on which schools in the district, as well as which student populations are experiencing the highest levels of chronic absenteeism. As an alternative to attendance awards, attendance work suggests rewarding behavior and collaborating with students and their families to see what would be motivating to get their students in the classroom. While attendance awards may not be effective, incentives may be. Offer incentives, like gas cards, grocery cards, food baskets, that help to address common barriers to getting to school, Chang said. Incentives also don't need to be costly. Consider simple things, recognition through certificates or assemblies, extra recess time, being allowed to wear street clothes versus a uniform, lunch with your favorite school staff person, even dancing in the hallways.
The next article comes from the New York Times. With Supreme Court decision, college admissions could become more subjective. Colleges have a game plan, like emphasizing the personal essay, but so do conservative groups that promise to monitor and, if necessary, go back to court. By Anemona Hartikalis. Published June 29, 2023. In the Supreme Court decision striking down racial and ethnic preferences in college admissions, Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. had harsh words for Harvard and the University of North Carolina, calling their admissions process elusive, opaque, and imponderable. But the court's ruling against the two universities on Thursday could lead to an admission system that is even more subjective and mysterious, as colleges try to follow the law, but also admit a diverse class of students. Officials at some selective institutions predicted that there would be less emphasis on standardized metrics like test scores and class rank, and more emphasis on personal qualities, told through recommendations and the application essay, the opposite of what many opponents of affirmative action had hoped for. Will it become more opaque? Yes, it will have to, said Danielle Wren-Holly, who is about to take over as president of Mount Holyoke College. It's a complex process, and this opinion will make it even more complex. In an interview, Edward Bloom, the founder and president of Students for Fair Admissions, the plaintiff, defended what he called standard measurements of academic qualifications, citing studies that showed test scores, grades, and coursework helped determine which students would thrive at competitive schools. He promised to enforce the decision, saying that Students for Fair Admissions and its council have been closely monitoring potential changes in admissions procedures. We remain vigilant and intend to initiate litigation should universities defiantly flout this clear ruling, he wrote in a statement on Thursday. It would be nearly impossible, however, to eliminate any mention or suggestion of race in the admissions process, starting with applicants' names. And in the decision, Justice Roberts specifically kept the door open to consider racial or ethnic background in someone's lived experience. Nothing in this opinion should be construed as prohibiting universities from considering an applicant's discussion of how race affected his or her life, be it through discrimination, inspiration, or otherwise, he wrote. Still, he warned that the personal essay could not play a stealth role in telegraphing race. In other words, the student must be treated based on his or her experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race, he wrote. Many universities have for too long done just the opposite. Universities, including Harvard and UNC, said on Thursday that they would comply with the ruling. But for outside skeptics, entangling a university's intentions will be challenging. How can they know whether an admissions decision was based on an essay about personal grit, or the race of the applicant that it revealed? I think a very plausible outcome of this will be that schools will just cheat and say, "Let's see who gets sued," said Richard Sander, a law professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, who has been critical of affirmative action. The chances of an individual school getting sued are low, and the cost of suing is really high. Some education officials have already discussed how to leverage the essay. Students should tailor their admissions essays to describe how race had affected their lives, said Shannon Gundy, an admissions official at the University of Maryland, in a recent presentation sponsored by the American Council on Education. Right now, students write about their soccer practice, they write about their grandmother dying, she said, adding, they don't write about their trials and tribulations. They don't write about the challenges that they've had to experience. Colleges could also ask for other more pointed essays, along the lines of the diversity, equity, and inclusion statements that have become a familiar part of faculty hiring. Ms. Holly, the incoming Mount Holyoke president, imagined a question that would say something like, one of the core values of Mount Holyoke College is diversity of all kinds. Please tell us why you value it, and what you think you bring to the Mount Holyoke community, in terms of diversity. College officials are predicting that the decision will lead to an immediate drop in the number of Black and Hispanic students at selective universities, echoing the experiences of California and Michigan, after those states adopted bans on affirmative action at their public universities years ago. Black students at the University of California, Berkeley, made up only 3.4% of last fall's incoming freshman class, a quarter century after the ban took effect. But many of the 100 or so schools that practice affirmative action have been planning for this moment for months, if not years. And they have already made moves toward a race-neutral admissions era, one that tries to follow the letter of the law, while finding ways to keep the ethos of affirmative action. Academic rigor is still important, but standardized tests? Not needed, and in some cases, not even read. Schools are increasingly giving preferences to high-achieving students from low-income families or to first-gen applicants, the first in their families to go to college. They are pouring money into supporting students and offering more need-based financial aid. Some selective colleges will also most likely play a much more direct role in nurturing prospective applicants. The University of Virginia, for example, announced a plan this month to target 40 high schools in 8 regions of the state that had little history of sending applicants. Duke University just promised full tuition grants to students from North and South Carolina, with family incomes of $150,000 or less. The hardest part really is identifying and recruiting the students, said Allison Byerly, president of Carleton College, which she said would expand its partnerships with community organizations. The students are out there, said Elle. Song Richardson, president of Colorado College, if we believe that talent is equally distributed across demographic groups, she said, then you would expect an unbiased recruitment process to result in a diverse class. Some educators believe that California's experience after its 1996 ban on affirmative action shows that such programs can work. The UC system overall admitted its most diverse class ever in 2021. But recruiting was expensive, the price was in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and the top campus, Berkeley, is still struggling to catch up. The risks are different for some public universities, like the University of North Carolina or the University of Virginia, which have already had run-ins with conservative politicians over diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. They will very likely tread carefully when it comes to any murky race-neutral policies. One of the real movements you see from public universities is to be as apolitical as they possibly can, in red states and in blue states, said Gordon Gee, the president of West Virginia University. It's kind of a Bud Light moment, he said, referring to the beer company's ill-fated hiring of a transgender spokeswoman that led to a boycott. There could also be pressure to blow up the entire process, eliminating preferences for the children of alumni and donors, who tend to be white and wealthy. So far, most schools have resisted those entreaties, saying that these preferences build community and assist in fundraising. But with cynicism around college admissions high, and many believing the system is rigged for the well-off and well-connected, the court's decision could force a reckoning. This is a big setback to racial justice, but it's also an opportunity, said Jerome Carabel, a UC Berkeley sociologist who has studied college admissions. Now is the time to go back to the drawing boards and see what we can do. There are a million ideas out there.
The next article comes from NBC News, and it's titled, A Latina Will Lead the Nation's Largest Four-Year University System for the First Time. The California State University System selected longtime higher education leader Mildred Garcia as its next chancellor. Posted July 12, 2023 by Edwin Flores. The nation's largest four-year university system has selected a Latina to oversee its 23 campuses for the first time. The California State University System has selected Mildred Garcia, who is Puerto Rican and a recognized longtime higher education leader, to be its 11th chancellor. I am honored, humbled, and excited for this opportunity to serve the nation's largest four-year university system and work alongside its dedicated leaders, faculty, and staff, and its talented and diverse students to further student achievement, close equity gaps, and continue to drive California's economic prosperity, Garcia said in a statement about her announcement as chancellor. The CSU system, whose institutions rank among the most diverse in the country, enrolled more than 457,000 students in fall 2022 and has nearly 130,000 annual graduates. It's the state's largest producer of bachelor's degrees. Garcia has been serving as president of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. She was president of Cal State Fullerton from 2012 to 2018, and was recognized for improving graduation rates to record numbers and nearly tripling philanthropic gift commitments, according to CSU's statement. She was also the first Latina president of CSU Dominguez Hills from 2007 to 2012, where she was credited with increasing retention rates for freshmen and transfer students and eliminating a structural deficit of $2.8 million. Dr. Garcia is a highly skilled, dynamic, and principled leader who has championed student success, especially for those students from underrepresented communities, Wenda Fong, chair of the CSU Board of Trustees, said in a statement. Garcia was raised in New York City as a first-generation student. Her parents came from Puerto Rico, and she was the first in her family to earn a college degree. She earned an associate degree from New York City Community College, a bachelor's in business education from Baruch College, and a master's in business education from New York University. At Teachers College, Columbia University, she earned a master's and a doctorate in higher education administration. She was part of the President's Advisory Commission on Educational Excellence for Hispanics under President Barack Obama. Garcia will succeed Interim Chancellor Jolene Kester, who's led the university since May 2022 following a public scandal regarding former CSU Chancellor Joseph Castro. Garcia will begin her tenure as Chancellor in October.
The next article comes from USA Today. After her non-binary child was harassed at school, a mom was shocked to win Title IX ruling. Posted by Terry Collins on July 12, 2023. Almost two agonizing years. Hoping. Waiting. Finally, an overwhelming conclusion. Brooke Johnson Paquette said she also felt vindicated when the U.S. Department of Education said last week that Remus, her transgender, non-binary child, had been continuously harassed in their rural Wisconsin school district, a violation of Title IX, a federal law that protects students against harassment. For years, Remus, now 17, was called derogatory slurs, commonly associated with LGBTQ+ people, by classmates in the small Rhinelander, Wisconsin school district, and purposely bumped into other students at school. The education department's report said the harassment was severe enough that one high school teacher admitted she couldn't protect Remus, whose pronouns are they, them, there, from being harassed by other students. The anguish became so bad that Johnson Paquette said in an exclusive interview with USA Today that the family felt ostracized and pushed out by our community. They briefly moved out of state, but not before she filed a complaint with the Federal Education Department's Office for Civil Rights in 2021. On Thursday, the department told Johnson Paquette it reached an agreement requiring the school district of Rhinelander to comply with Title IX and provide additional training to students and staff on recognizing discrimination, harassment, and bullying. "We've been on this journey for nearly 5 years without some resolution, until now," Johnson Paquette said Monday, adding the decision and the national attention are still sinking in. "This proves that our lives are full of merit and proof of what we've been through." This section is titled Education Department: Unprecedented Surge of Civil Rights Complaints. The agreement recognizing what Remus Johnson endured is the latest action taken by the Education Department's civil rights arm to crack down on noncompliant schools using the landmark gender equity law, as concerns persist about discrepancies in how students of different genders are treated in K-12 schools. The Education Department intervened after Johnson Paquette said reported complaints to the school district about Remus being mocked and targeted by their classmates weren't addressed. The complaint came at the same time the Education Department saw an unprecedented surge of civil rights complaints regarding students in U.S. schools, wrote Catherine Lahman, the Civil Rights Office head, in an annual report. The office received nearly 19,000 complaints during the 2022 fiscal year, compared with almost 17,000 in 2016. More than 9,000 complaints in 2022 involved Title IX, the Office for Civil Rights reported. At the same time, threats of violence against the LGBTQI+ community are intensifying, according to the Biden administration and a recent Homeland Security report to law enforcement agencies. That was followed by the Human Rights Campaign declaring a state of emergency for LGBTQ+ people in the U.S. and issuing a Know Your Rights information sheet for the community. The next section is titled, In Fear for My Child's Life. Johnson Paquette said she filed a complaint with the Office for Civil Rights Chicago office during Remus' freshman year. That was 2 years after Remus told their family they were different and non-binary, Johnson Paquette said. Research shows that more gender-expansive young people like Remus have been coming out at an earlier age in the last 5 years, said Robert Marks, an associate professor of child and adolescent development at San Jose State University. While it's tempting to say they're encouraged by TikTok and other social media, the reality is they are gaining more confidence in telling their parents, guardians, and friends. And that's having a ripple effect, Mark said. Johnson Paquette said she began educating herself about what it means to be LGBTQ+ for Rima's safety. Johnson Paquette, 43, a Rhinelander native, read LGBTQ+ literature, watched documentaries, and chatted with concerned friends. The family tried 3 therapists in the area to help them, but Johnson Paquette said they weren't effective. The family now has a psychologist more familiar with LGBTQ+ issues, Johnson Paquette said. They also plan to join a gender-affirming program in their new hometown in rural central Wisconsin. We went through our ups and downs in terms of our communication, Johnson Paquette said. I was in fear for my child's life from the mental and physical abuse. It's very hard to endure, and we'll have to cut that article short for time.
The final article comes from the Washington Post, and it's titled, quote, "Racist Grooming. My parents are trying to ban so many picture books. The culture war over what children can read has reached illustrated texts for the youngest readers," by Hannah Nattinson, posted July 12, 2023. Quote, "Dangerous, grooming, reckless, racist, lying." All are adjectives that adults applied to children's picture books as they sought to ban the titles from schools last year. These illustrated texts, intended for the youngest readers, are a surprising focus of the historic spike in efforts to restrict literature in classrooms and K-12 libraries, according to a first-of-its-kind Washington Post analysis of school book challenges. The discontent with children's picture books overwhelmingly centers on titles with LGBTQ characters and storylines, which were targeted in 75% of such challenges, the Post found. The top motive, cited in 64% of the picture book complaints, was a wish to prevent children from reading about lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, non-binary, and queer lives. The next most common reason was books, quote, "inappropriate nature," cited in 44% of challenges. And the third most common reason was that books were, quote, "anti-police," a charge included in 25% of challenges. This book opens up conversations that lead to grooming and does not separate education from moral beliefs, an Idaho woman wrote in a filing against Pride, The Story of Harvey Milk and the Rainbow Flag. A Pennsylvania woman alleged that the book Julian is a Mermaid, featuring a boy who dresses as a mermaid, will, quote, "confuse a child to use drag clothing and makeup." And a man in Virginia wrote that the book A Place Inside of Me, A Poem to Heal the Heart, which explores a black child's reaction to the police killing of a girl in his hometown, has very dark and sinister parts, including the fact, quote, "law enforcement is depicted as villains throughout this work." And we'll have to cut that article short for time. We've run out of time for this episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.